Her bedroom was consistent with her parlor. It perpetuated the same camping-out atmosphere, crates and suitcases, everything packed and ready to go, like the belongings of a criminal who feels the law not far behind. In the parlor there was no conventional furniture, but the bedroom had the bed itself, a double one at that, and quite flashy, blonde wood, tufted satin. She left the door of the bathroom open and conversed from there. Between the flushing and the brushing, most of what she said was unintelligible, but the gist of it was, she supposed I knew Mag Wildwood had moved in, and wasn't that convenient? Because if you're going to have a roommate, and she isn't a dyke, then the next best thing is a perfect fool, which Mag was, because then you can dump the lease on them and send them out for the laundry. One could see that Holly had a laundry problem. The room was strewn, like a girl's gymnasium. And you know, she's quite a successful model. Isn't that fantastic? But a good thing, she said, hobbling out of the bathroom as she adjusted a garter. It ought to keep her out of my hair most of the day, and there shouldn't be too much trouble on the man front. She's engaged. Nice guy, too. Though there's a tiny difference in height. I'd say a foot, her favor. What the hell? She was on her knees, poking under the bed. After she'd found what she was looking for, a pair of lizard shoes, she had to search for a blouse, a belt. And it was a subject to ponder, how, from such wreckage, she evolved the eventual effect. Pampered, calmly immaculate, as though she'd been attended by Cleopatra's maids. She said, "Listen," and cupped her hand under my chin. "I'm glad about the story, really I am." That Monday in October 1943. A beautiful day with the buoyancy of a bird. To start, we had Manhattans at Joe Bell's, and when he heard of my good luck, champagne cocktails on the house. Later, we wandered toward Fifth Avenue where there was a parade. The flags in the wind, the thump of military bands and military feet, seemed to have nothing to do with war, but to be rather a fanfare arranged in my personal honor. We ate lunch at the cafeteria in the park. Afterwards, avoiding the zoo, Holly said she couldn't bear to see anything in a cage. We giggled, ran, sang along the paths toward the old wooden boathouse, now gone. Leaves floated on the lake. On the shore, a park man was fanning a bonfire of them, and the smoke, rising like Indian signals, was the only smudge on the quivering air. Aprils have never meant much to me. Autumns seemed that season of beginning. Spring. Which is how I felt sitting with Holly on the railings of the boathouse porch. I thought of the future and spoke of the past. Because Holly wanted to know about my childhood. She talked of her own, too. But it was elusive, nameless, placeless, an impressionistic recital. Though the impression received was contrary to what one expected. For she gave an almost voluptuous account of swimming and summer, Christmas trees, pretty cousins and parties. In short, happy in a way that she was not, and never, certainly, the background of a child who had run away. Or, I asked, wasn't it true that she'd been out on her own since she was 14? She rubbed her nose. That's true. The other isn't, but really, darling, you made such a tragedy out of your childhood, I didn't feel I should compete. She hopped off the railing. Anyway, it reminds me, I ought to send Fred some peanut butter. The rest of the afternoon we were east and west, worming out of reluctant grocers' cans of peanut butter, a wartime scarcity. Dark came before we'd rounded up a half dozen jars, the last at a delicatessen on Third Avenue. It was near the antique shop with the palace of a birdcage in its window, so I took her there to see it, and she enjoyed the point, its fantasy. But still, it's a cage.